I'm going to call the meeting to order of the Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs. Today is Wednesday, February 20th. We do not yet have a quorum, so we'll take up the minutes later. Representative Shumper, we're going to move your bill when we get a quorum. Right now I'm going to have you make a presentation, and then when we get a quorum, we'll vote on it. Representative Shumper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is a fix-it bill, a rather small and limited bill, designed to fix the problem for 1 year only. As you all know, our respective caucuses shifted, or our respective political parties, the major political parties, shifted the caucuses from March 4th to February 4th to take advantage of participation in the Super Tuesday caucuses and primaries that occurred all around the country. And I think we all felt that was a good idea. The problem, of course, is that statute establishes caucus day on March 4th, and by statute it prohibits local units of government from meeting on that day and a lot of other activities as well. And the League of Minnesota Cities approached me about this. They have something like 79 cities that only meet once a month, and so if they didn't meet on March 4th, or they meet once a month on a first Tuesday, and if they didn't meet on February 4th, they're wondering if they are excluded or not excluded from meeting on March 4th. And if they go ahead and meet, will they get in trouble with any of their constituents because the law says now they can't meet? And so this is simply a one-time only fix to say that, yes, they can go ahead and meet on March 4th and do regular business if they so choose, and they won't be under any political or legal liability. I have here Ann Higgins from the League of Minnesota Cities. I think she'd like to say a few things. That would be okay.
All right. Please go ahead. State your name for the record.
My name is Ann Higgins. I'm from the League of Minnesota Cities. I just very briefly want to point to the information that we put out at your places about that we did advise cities about the misgiving that we had with respect to March 4th, but we thought if there was time to set the committee was gracious enough to let us have a hearing. We could possibly get this bill to the governor and signed before March 4th, thinking that perhaps there are going to be cities that need to take some official meeting action between February and March, of course. And with some of the smaller cities only meeting once a month, it would be a better outcome for them if they were able to take advantage of the March 4th meeting if they needed to.
All right. Are there questions from members? All right. There is a list provided by the League of Minnesota Cities in your packet that states all of the communities who meet the first Tuesday and the time. Do you want to speak about this list a little bit? Ms. Higgins.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that list is from our directory database, and it shows the first 71 cities listed there have only meetings on the first Tuesday of the month and no other day. The meetings that follow on in other cities indicate there is a meeting on maybe the third Tuesday as well as the first Tuesday of the month. And I just wanted to let you see that in case you had some questions about perhaps cities in your district. But most of the cities in that first 71 or so are outside the metro. I think I counted four in the metro, but the rest are outside the metropolitan area and are generally smaller cities.
All right. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? All right. Hearing none, thank you, Representative Shumper. As soon as we have a quorum, we'll vote on the bill.
If I could just add, Madam Chair, in thinking about this, we also contacted the Green Party because they are going to be having their caucus on March 5th, but they are a minor political party, and so we aren't concerned about any statutory problems with them. And Ms. Higgins did talk to them, and they have no major objections to us going ahead and passing this piece of legislation. So,
all right.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lanning. There is some discussion about whether or not this would be a candidate for the consent calendar. Would you have any objection to us considering that?
Not as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Thank you, Representative Lanning. All right. So the motion after we have a quorum will be to send this bill to the consent calendar.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Shumper. All right. Next on the agenda is the oversight of the Metropolitan Council. And with that, Mr. Shetman, if you would come to the table and state your name for the record and go ahead and start.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetman. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council, and appreciate the opportunity to be here. On behalf of the Met Council, Peter Bell and Tom Weaver, Peter the Chair and Tom Weaver, our Regional Administrator, cannot be here today. They are working on some Central Corridor issues that are trying to be taken care of before the Council adopts the project scope next week. So their apologies. Peter may be stopping by if that wraps up. I know I mentioned that to the Chair a few minutes ago. So on behalf of Peter, I'm going to present his comments this afternoon. There are three areas that the Council is planning on presenting on today. One is an overview of the Council's annual report. The second one is the Council's operating capital budget. And the last piece is an overview of our livable communities program. I know that we gave the committee copies of some reports that the Council is required to do by the legislature. And we're going to just kind of cover those in a little bit more of a general way. And if you have specific questions, we can get into that. But in the meantime, I think I'll just start with our annual report.
Okay, just to let you know that in the event I do get a quorum, I will interrupt you and we'll make the motion on the. I do have a quorum right now, so we'll do that. Okay. Representative Lanning, do you want a few minutes to talk to any of your members to let them know what we're doing?
Madam Chair, I don't think that's necessary.
All right. Thank you. I will move that House File 2795 be recommended to pass and be placed on the consent calendar. Any questions from members who just entered the room? All right. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. All right. Mr. Shetman, go ahead.
Great. Well, I know we've been before the committee before, but I just wanted to touch briefly on the four major goals that the Council is dealing with. The first one is to improve our regional transportation system. The second one is to work with local communities to accommodate growth. The third is to maximize effectiveness of services, infrastructure, and investments. And the fourth is to protect and enhance natural assets. So our first goal is to improve our transportation system, build transit ridership, and slow the growth of traffic congestion. And our vision for improved transit is to expand our bus system, add enhancements such as bus-only shoulder lanes and park and ride lots, and develop a network of bus and rail transitways with the goal of doubling our ridership by the year 2030. In 2007, we made major strides toward this, and as you can see, we secured the full funding grant agreement for the North Star Commuter Rail Line. We helped win the $133 million UPA federal grant to accelerate the I-35W corridor and the Cedar Avenue BRT, and as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, that we're moving forward with the Central Corridor LRT project, and the Council is going to be adopting the project scope for the Central Corridor project a week from today.
And if I could interrupt you for just a moment. Members, I would encourage you to ask questions as we go. We have a shortened committee hearing today because of session. We are going to adjourn on time. And so if you have a pressing question, please interrupt. Mr. Shetman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another way we are achieving our transit vision is that last year, our Metro Transit ridership was at 77 million rides. That is a 25-year high. We are very proud of that. If you have questions about our transit piece, Brian Lamb, our general manager of Metro Transit, is here to answer those questions. But the total regional transit ridership rose to 89.3 million rides. And that is not just Metro Transit. It's our suburban transit provider partners. It's Metro Mobility. It's our community-based program. And we are very, very proud of this. And an indication of how transit ridership is really taking off is that our bus ridership and park and ride usage is up by 11% in just the past year.
Representative
House,
did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a small question. When you have that number, the 77 million and the 89 million, I know that's not different people, but how many times do you think the average person that does do this regularly, or how many people constituted 89 million rides? Do you have any idea?
Sure, Madam Chair and Representative. I'm going to take a shot at it, and then I'm going to let Brian maybe come up and correct me if it needs to be, but these are rides. They are not riders. So if it's a commuter who's taking the bus to work in the morning and back, that would count as two rides. If that was what you were looking at, I don't know how many one way rides that we actually provide, because if you're going one way, you generally are coming back another way, unless you're catching a ride of the car. But I think that that's got to be pretty cool.
Madam Chair, I can shorten this. Just send me a memo or a message when you find out. I want to know how many people on average ride this, either per day, per week, or per month.
Sure.
And then how you extrapolate that out to 89 million.
Mr. Sentinel, if you could provide that for the whole committee, that would
be helpful. That's what I meant.
Yep, Madam Chair, Representative Howard, I'd be happy to do that. We have those numbers available, and I'll get them to you as quickly as I can. I'll try to do it by tomorrow, when I think there's a big vote coming up in the House as well. So
otherwise, we meet again on Monday.
Okay, well, great.
Between now and Monday would be great.
Great, all right. Our second goal is to cooperate to accommodate growth. And as you know, the council, or the Land Planning Act, which this committee has jurisdiction over, requires communities to adopt local comprehensive plans that are consistent with the council's framework and system plans. And the next round of comp plans are due at the end of this year. In 2007, the council provided over $1 million in grants to 46 cities and 3 counties to assist their planning efforts. We've held numerous meetings with local officials, as well as a series of planning workshops. And one of the things that we're proud of is that we've provided new tools to assist local officials in getting their comp plans turned in, and to take away some of the questions that they may have about the comp planning process. We have a new online local planning handbook. We've got a new interactive mapping tool for those communities, and we also have a natural resources digital atlas to assist in identifying the natural areas that they may wish to protect. Through our Livable Communities program, which I know Guy is going to speak to here in a minute, the council has provided grants to assist communities in achieving their planning objectives, and we've done this through a number of our grant programs, $5.7 million in grants to clean up polluted land. That's our TIBRA program that we have been here discussing in the past. $5.9 million for projects that link housing, jobs, and services, and $1.9 million to support affordable housing initiatives. I'm trying to do this really fast. So. Goal number three is the council is trying to maximize the effectiveness of our regional services, infrastructure, investments, and incentives. One of the ways that we're doing that is through our I&I program. I&I is clear water that enters our wastewater system, consuming capacity that is needed to serve future growth in the region. As everybody knows, we're talking about 1 million people coming to the area by the year 2030, and what we're trying to do is to conserve that capacity in our existing wastewater our pipes so that we don't have to go through the very extensive process of building new pipes, and we can clear this clean water out and hopefully use the excess that we have in there right now. I've got a quick little diagram here that shows how inflow and infiltration work. The clear water gets into our interceptors or sewers through cracks in the pipe, and then through sump pumps and foundries, and then it's also done, as you can see they don't show the sump pump piece here, but also sump pumps pump water into our sewers that is relatively clean water as well. So we had a issue with the city of Forest Lake a few years ago where they were pumping all kinds of clean water through their sump pumps into our system, and as it turned out, we were able to go in and work with the city, get those sump pumps disconnected from the sanitary sewer, and it basically cleared up their entire inflow and infiltration issue. So I've got friends or folks here from our environmental services who can answer any questions you have about that. I know I've been to the committee with this last year as well. So.
All right, Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Mr. Shetman, does the Metropolitan Council have jurisdiction over storm water runoff in the metro area?
Mr. Shetman.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskin, We do not, but I can let our folks are here if you want to ask them any specific question about that, but the council does not.
Mr. Representative,
thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I guess I am interested then in finding out how jurisdiction was divvied up, particularly in those parts of the metro area where both stormwater and sanitary sewer used to run together, and if all of those ties that used to bind are now severed and the stormwater is completely under the jurisdiction. Madam Chair, you may have been maybe familiar with an issue that was in, I believe it was last Sunday, Star Tribune, talking about stormwater issues, capacity issues, and I think that might be something this committee needs to take a look at further down the road.
Thank you, Representative.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Reducing influent infiltration is just one of the ways that the council has attempted to maximize our regional investments. We've also invested in new technology to improve our efficiencies. We've eliminated nearly 200 FTEs. We've refinanced bonds to take advantage of lower interest rates. We've also launched an energy conservation initiative, and we've held our property tax rates flat and maintained our AAA bond rating, which is Peter Bell would say he's very, very proud of. And we are very proud of the fact that we are able to do that. It's very important to us, and I know that Beth Lutram Anderson, who's our CFO, will be here in a minute to talk about our budget, and she can probably speak to that a little further if you would like. Our final goal is to protect and enhance vital natural assets. Another Peter Bell term that I will use is that our regional parks and trails are one of the crown jewels of our region, and the council takes that very, very seriously. Our annual resident survey shows that the thing they prize most about our region is our wealth of parks, trails, and natural areas. And in our 2020 regional parks plan, we propose to expand our park system by 35% from 53,000 acres to 70,000 acres, and we would also plan to expand our trail system from 177 miles to 877 miles. We recognize that parks must compete with many other worthy programs for limited public resources. So last year, with the help of Representative Dominguez and this committee, we were pleased that the legislature approved our proposal to create a regional parks foundation, and our plan is to solicit funds from the private sector and supplement the public dollars that we receive from the state for parkland acquisition. And right now we are exploring a partnership with the Parks and Trails Council to assist with this effort.
Mr. Chetman.
Yes?
I just want to make certain that we are not talking about having PCF Park or, as we move forward, there will be no commercialization of the naming of these parks.
Madam Mr. Chair and committee members, that is not the intention of the Parks Foundation. The donors of the private dollars will be they won't be identified, and I don't believe that our regional park system is interested in all of a sudden putting naming rights on our regional parks. It's a public use, and that was not the intention of the whole Parks Foundation, nor was it the intention of Representative Dominguez or Senator Rest or Senator Pappas would help us with this.
Mr. Sutton, I just didn't think that it was their intention. I just wanted to make it clear
yep.
that in the event that arose later on, I should I be the chair at the time, would not be interested in pursuing that path.
Sure. Thank you.
Do you have a question over here? Yes. Go ahead.
Great. Now, our efforts to protect the environment go beyond preserving parks and natural areas. Last year, we took the delivery of the first of 169 hybrid buses that we were adding to the Metro Transit fleet over the next 5 years. And I'm not sure if the members of this committee, I think it was back in January, like 16, 17, 18, we had our Metro Transit hybrid bus available to, actually, we had two buses available to take members from the Capitol to the Humphrey Institute so they could touch and feel and see our hybrid vehicles. And I was not able to attend, but I would understand that they were very well received. And it was nice for us to be able to do that because generally there isn't much of an opportunity for the Met Council and Metro Transit to be able to have folks outside of the transportation policy and finance committees experience our buses and this technology. So we were very happy to be able to do that.
Representative Comfort.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, Mr. Shepman, I was one of the legislators who wrote. I was quite impressed. It's too bad it costs as much as it does, but I really want to caution you on your second point there about switching to 20% diesel fuel, and I want to urge you to send your smartest people in the Metro Council to go and look. There's a lot of research and information, good scientific research coming out in the last 6 months to a year that's starting to raise a lot of questions about the environmental value of ethanol, especially the higher blends. And if one of your goals, and I think it is, of improving air quality here in the metro, you might want to have some of your smartest people look at a lot of that recent research coming out, because you might want to modify your plans.
Madam Chair, Representative Comfort, that is good advice, and I know Mr. Lamb is in the audience as well, and I will talk to our folks over who really have been doing the biofuel study for the Met Council, and that's great advice. So I'll be happy to take that on.
All right. Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Mr. Shetman, I'm going back to goal number four, right, the regional parks plan. The plan is to expand the system by 35%. Knowing that's not just some euphoric number that was picked out of the hat, are these properties that the park system is looking to acquire already identified, and are they already off of the tax rolls in the municipalities where they are currently?
Mr. Chairman.
Madam Chair, Representative Biskin, I believe many of them are identified, but I don't believe that they are off the tax rolls at this point. But case in point, down in your area, we had a opportunity for the Boyle Knessick Park, which turned out we have identified that as a long-term park, and we were able to go in, secure that land, and hold it basically as a park reserve. And I think that is what our long-range plan is trying to do, is identify these parks. And when the land becomes available, we will try to go in and acquire those properties. But to answer your question, I do not believe that we have been able to acquire all of those properties as of yet.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Shetman, and just the members of this committee, I'd urge, we watch this with caution, all right, and many members of the legislature who come from northern Minnesota can speak very eloquently to the fact that when government acquires more and more property, and of course the services that are expected to be paid for by property taxes continue on and continue to go up, the property that's remaining, the taxable property that remaining, is smaller, and therefore we double the impact of property taxes on that property which is remaining. So while the parks are nice and they're pretty, I like parks, I think we all do, I know the turkey running through my backyard like parks also, all right? And we have to look at this as a balance. So I think that's an issue that this committee needs to be aware of.
All right. Mr. Secretary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to try to... You know what? That's the end of the presentation. And do you have copies of this in your... In your packets, and also everything that I cover here is basically covered in the annual report, which is also in your packets, I believe. So
they were delivered ahead of time to their.
Oh, they were delivered ahead of time. Even better.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is probably at your office. If you have specific questions, I would be happy to come see you, speak to you about any of those. If you don't have any questions, in the interest of time, I'll try to see if Woods from Anderson can come up and go over our budget.
That would be great. Questions from members? All right. Otherwise, please come to the table, state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Beth Woods from Anderson. I'm the Council's Chief Financial Officer. I'll just walk through quickly the background for the council's budget, and this is the council's mission statement to develop in cooperation with local communities a comprehensive regional planning framework focusing on transportation, wastewater, parks, and aviation systems that guides the efficient growth of the metropolitan area. The council operates transit and wastewater services and administers housing and other grant programs. So the next slide shows you the principles that the budget was adopted under. Of course, focusing on our mission, efficiently utilizing current and future regional infrastructure services and resources, operating quality services in a customer-focused and efficient manner, and encouraging innovation to improve services and programs. Just a reminder for the committee that the council is on a calendar year, not a fiscal year, and just a picture that this budget is adopted from 1108 to 123108. This slide shows revenues.
We're just going to turn up your mic.
Okay, sorry. I can try to speak up.
Okay.
Better? Thank you, Madam Chair. This slide shows revenues, and I will talk in just a minute a little bit more about the property tax levy. But let me just quickly run through these revenue sources. The council does levy property taxes. We also receive federal revenue. $55 million of this $86 million of federal revenue is for our Housing and Redevelopment Authority, primarily for the purpose of providing Section 8 funding to landlords on behalf of about 6,000 families in the region. The other $31 million is for transit purposes from the federal government. State revenues include motor vehicle sales tax and state appropriations, primarily a small amount of other grants is included in that number as well. The wastewater charges and the SAC fees are really the fees that support our environmental services division. Fares and special revenues speak for themselves. These are fares from our transit system, the regional transit system, really. And then other revenues and sources include things like local revenue from Hennepin County for the light rail system, interest income, things like that. The next slide shows you expenditures, and this is by department, regional administration, pretty much the central services function. A large amount of this budget is allocated back to the divisions for central functions like legal, IS, those kinds of things. Community development budget, about half of this budget, about $5 million of the $10.3 million is for administrative purposes for the Housing and Redevelopment Authority. The other $5 million is for the council's planning function for oversight of land use plans. Here you see the environmental services budget. The operating side does not include the debt service portion of their budget. Sometimes you'll see a number higher than this. That's because the debt service is included. And there is Metro Transit and Metropolitan Transportation Services. The debt service numbers, the $138 million, include $10.3 for parks, $40.6 for transit, and $86 million for environmental services.
Could you please repeat those numbers?
Absolutely. $10.3 for parks, $40.6 for transportation and transit. Environmental services is $86 million. The pass-through numbers are for, again, our Housing and Redevelopment Authority, the Section 8 funding, about $55 million, as it was on the revenue side. Parks, $8.6 million, that comes from a legislative authority for parks operating and maintenance grants that flow right through to the parks implementing agencies. And then our livable communities grant of $16.9 million. This slide gives you just a sense of the magnitude of the revenues and expenses. And just you can see how large environmental services and Metro Transit are, of course, a big part of our budget, as well as debt service for grants. Here you see the volatility that we've been dealing with motor vehicle sales tax. Motor vehicle sales tax is one of our primary revenue sources for our transit system. You can see that since the council began receiving motor vehicle sales tax in 2002, actually, it is that the revenue source has been dropping. We're hoping that it will increase now, but we are concerned about what will be happening in the next forecast. We do have a small budgeted use of reserves in the budget that's adopted. The $4.9 million for operating budget use of reserves is a $650,000 use of reserves for water supply planning. That was a planned use of reserves money that were set aside to do that planning. Environmental Services has had a number of years of surplus, and they had a planned use of reserves of $1 million of some of that surplus money that's been set aside in the past. And our transportation and our transit divisions, both units have planned use of reserves for money, again, that was set aside in prior years. Debt service reserves really timing on when the levies and the fees come in and when we pay the debt service, and similar thing for the past due. It's really primarily timing. This slide shows you the council's 2008 property tax levy in a comparison to 2007. One of the things that that this council has as a principle is to keep the property tax levy impact to regional taxpayers flat. And we do that by limiting these property taxes over time to a 1% increase. Now here you see that there's a 2.4% increase on the total of the levies down in the bottom right-hand corner. That's because there was a slight reduction last year, so to bring it back to that 1% slope, this amount brings it right back on that 1% slope line. So again, the intention is to keep the impact to taxpayers flat. This slide shows you where we are under levy limits. Our general operations levy of $10.3 million pays for half of community development, primarily that planning function in community development, and about $5 million for regional administration. And you can see that that is under the levy limit by almost $2 million. The council has chosen to levy the highway right-of-way levy to the maximum in 2008. And the demonstration, the LCDA, the Livable Communities Demonstration Account, is also under the levy limit. The council's direction to keep the property tax impact of taxpayers flat has resulted in these tax rate changes over from 2003 to 2007. So you can see by keeping that on that 1% slope line, the actual tax rates have dropped significantly across the region based on the council's only property tax rate. Madam Chair, that is my presentation on the operating budget. I'd be happy to answer any questions, otherwise I'll move on to tax.
Questions? Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I hate to be the hog of the mic, but I do have a question for Ms. Woodstrom Anderson, and then probably an second follow-up inquiry. Ms. Woodstrom Anderson, could you remind this committee as to what type of year the Metropolitan Council uses when it affects its budget, i.e., do you use the fiscal year like we use here in state government, or do you use a calendar year?
Representative, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Biskin, the council adopts its budget on a calendar year basis. It really shows in this slide here. So it's not fiscal year, but it is that calendar year, January to December.
Representative Biskin.
And Madam Chair, and I knew that, you know, they say don't ask the questions you don't know, but here's one I'm not really sure of, so I think if you could enlighten this committee. Now, we're supposed to have oversight over the Metropolitan Council, this committee itself. Now, members on the operating budget, you know, we're looking at real money, all right? A million here, a million there, you're talking about real money. We're looking at $500 million in revenue on an annual basis, right? And yet, by the time we come into the legislative session, the budget's already been set. Right. So my question, Ms. Woodstrom Anderson, is what besides the one-time headache of making the shift, right, what would be the policy argument against this committee and the legislature as a whole requiring the Metropolitan Council to set a fiscal year budget that aligns with the state budget?
Ms. Woodstrom.
Madam Chair, thank you. Madam Chair and Representative Biskin, we have looked at the idea of moving our fiscal year from a calendar year to a state fiscal year. One of the reasons that we've decided or looked at keeping it the same is really our relationship with the cities. So we're on the same fiscal year as the cities and the same fiscal year as counties, and that really relates a lot to our property tax levy. In addition to that, our wastewater services fees are of course charged to cities, and we adapt our budget in time so that we can give the fees to the cities in time for their own budget collection. Now that could be done on a fiscal basis too. That is probably a huge issue, but primarily related to the city work we do and the property tax levy. That's the primary reason we left it the same.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Woodstrom Anderson. I guess another point for this committee to think about, all right, because while I understand the need to align with the cities, the other entity, which is a major collector of property taxes, which is our school districts, in fact, the number one area of state budget is education, and they are on a fiscal year budgeting calendar. So to try and move all of those to some level of uniformity, I think, would help us as state policymakers be able to make some sense out of a lot of numbers that come at us from a lot of different directions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe either Mr. Shetland or Ms. Woodstrom Anderson. Is there any portion of your expenditure budget that provides funding for water resource management, dealing with clean water, trying to clean up water, or in any way manage the water resources?
Mr. Shetland.
Madam Chair and Representative Lanning, Jason Willett, who's our finance director for our environmental services department, I can answer that question.
And kind of a follow-up question, if I might, to that as well. If Met Council in any way seeks funding, Clean Water Legacy funds, and if so, how do you use those funds? And are you, I guess I need to get a picture of to what extent water resource management is a part of your operation.
Go ahead, state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Lanning. My name is Jason Willett. I'm Finance Director for the Environmental Services Division. That's essentially the wastewater utility for the metropolitan area. And the first thing I would say is pretty much all of our expenditures are involved with water management and cleaning up water in terms of the wastewater that does go into the rivers, the effluent, after we clean it up. So if you want to consider all of that as water reclamation and water management in some sense. We do a little bit of testing for water quality in rivers and streams. It's not directly related, but it's part of our program, and there is a special statute that allows using the wastewater revenues for that. And then, as you're probably aware, there's a water supply planning initiative that's funded not at all out of wastewater revenues. That's sort of the overall picture. In terms of the water legacy funding, I'm not sure if we get any of that money currently. I suspect that if that occurs, that some of that money will go to the Public Facilities Authority, and that they will then use that for additional wastewater treatment loans. We are a big beneficiary of that program. We get as much funding as we can through them because it's a lower interest rate to us.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I take it what you're saying, that outside of wastewater related issues, there's a very limited amount of activity that you have in other water resource management things. And the other follow-up question I would have is, does the council then have any official relationship with the water management organizations or watersheds? And if so, what is the what is that connection, and is any money involved in that?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, I don't believe there's an official relationship with them. We do try to partner with water management organizations. It's not a transfer of money, but there's a lot of water education stuff that we do in support of their activities. We don't have stormwater responsibility, and we don't have funds for that. That's either city or water management organization. So that's pretty informal sorts of things that we can just try to coordinate with those organizations.
Thank you.
Mr. Shetland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you like Ms. Woodson-Anderson to proceed with the capital budget? I can't see the clock here.
We have about 14 minutes left.
Great. Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The assumptions for the capital budget are really coordinate with the operating budget. And first of all, preserving existing regional infrastructure is one of our high priorities and assumptions in the CIP. The CIP is resource constrained to available, and that's available or expected to be available, federal, state, and regional resources. And then, of course, the CIP needs to support the operating budget goal of no increase in regional property impact to taxpayers. Now, our capital improvement program document includes really three pieces. And so the CIP itself is really the visionary piece of the plan. And this is the forward-looking, what the plan is. Does it include things that are not funded, includes things that we know intentionally aren't funded, but really is just the plan. Then we have what really is, you might think of as our appropriations, the authorized capital program. This is really the projects that are authorized by the council to move forward. So in the document that we've published, you'll see these projects, and they'll include the full amount of the projects, include spending on those projects that happened in the past. And then another piece that's required by the statute is for us to adopt a one-year slice, a 2008 capital budget amount, just the one-year slice. So there are three really different pieces of information in that document, and that slide will help you put those together. The CIP that was adopted by the council for the next 6 years is a $2.9 billion plan. $885 million of that $2.9 billion is currently authorized, but $2 billion of it is not currently authorized. So that's the forward-looking visionary piece, not currently authorized to move forward. One major project there is, of course, the Central Corridor. In the plan, not authorized to move forward. $1 billion of the $2.9 billion is to preserve existing regional infrastructure and investment, sewers, buses, and so on. Here you see $2.9 billion wastewater, very capital-intensive organization, and transit ways, you can see, also very capital-intensive, and then transit and parks. This slide shows you how we finance the CIP. Federal funding on the transit side primarily is a big part of the transit capital program, about 36% of the overall $2.9 billion. State money's important part of this project as well. The other monies are really local match from other local units of government. And then the council has authority to do regional borrowing, and that's about 44% of the overall capital financing. Of that 44%, 76% of it is for wastewater. Fully fee-based, it is GO debt, but it's paid off with wastewater fees and SAC fees. Transit and parks are both levy-based debt. And you see the numbers there. The council does task us with looking at indicators to determine whether the council's taxes and fees and determine what the impact that is on on taxpayers in the region. So the first slide, 2003 to 2012, outstanding debt as we project it as a percent of market value. Now this was this includes from 2001 to 2006 an 11.3% increase in market value, and for 2006 to 2010 a 10.2% increase in market value. It's to be seen, Madam Chair, if that's a little bit aggressive for the years going out.
Explain to me the market value of what?
This is the market value of the market value in the regions that our property taxes are spread across.
Do you believe that the housing crisis will have a significant impact on this chart that was not anticipated? Ms. Woodson?
Madam Chair, I think we did bring the increase for 2006 to 2010 down from where it's been for the prior years. It's possible that it will have some impact. And, of course, what we look for on these charts is this downslope, and you know, we don't want to see big slides up. So we'll continue to monitor this over time, and I think there will be some impact on the slide. There's no question. We're hoping to still keep it flat.
Okay, thank you.
The next slide shows the same time period 2003 to 2012, and so taxes and user fees. So this includes our wastewater fees as well as taxes as a percent of regional income. And again, we just are watching for this flat and not wanting to see it sloping up to large amounts in the future. And the next slide shows taxes and user fees on a $250,000 residential homestead. And again, just trying to watch for that flat look out to the future. So in summary, Madam Chair, our operating budget, one of our important goals, as Mr. Shetman said earlier, is to maintain our AAA bond rating. We did just sell debt today, and we did retain our AAA bond rating on that debt. We're happy for that. And, of course, the thing we've talked about several times is holding the property tax impact flat for taxpayers. And then the capital budget is a balanced CIP, expenses constrained by anticipated revenue. And then priority to preserving existing infrastructure. Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Kim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if Ms. Woodstrom Anderson can answer this question or if this information that Mr. Shetman would need to get to us. You know, the reason I asked about stormwater system earlier was, you know, because of the issues that we're currently seeing, I'm glad to know that the Metropolitan Council was not in charge of the stormwater system. See, when we have incidents like this, you can bet that the cost to fix all of the stormwater systems that need to be repaired are going to probably be prohibitive for the communities in which they reside. And then this legislature and taxpayers throughout the state of Minnesota are going to be asked to ante up, all right, to repair those. Well, the same thing, and even with even more devastating consequences, could take place with a number of the systems that the Metropolitan Council does oversee. Can you give this committee assurances that every inch of a sewer pipeline, every interceptor, every treatment plant is on some schedule for maintenance, repair, and ultimately replacement, so that it doesn't all of a sudden hit us by surprise that, holy buckets, we've got three treatment plants, you know, they're 25 years old, and now we've got to replace them because they're failing. Do we have that schedule? Does the council have said schedule?
Mr. Stetman?
Madam Chair, Representative Fiskins, I'll let Mr. Willett respond to that, but I think you'll like the answer.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Fiskins. Yes, we do 50-year planning for all of the facilities, both the plants and the sewer pipes. The CIP has specific details of the expenditure that we anticipate in the next 10 years. Our plan is $1.55 billion over the next 10 years. The rehabilitation it's actually, I think it's 47% of that that's anticipated in the next 10 years. So as you probably know, we have quite an engineering-oriented organization, and they spend a lot of time on the long-term plans and then whittling it down with more certainty as we get closer. We don't want to spend any of that money before we have to. This is a time value money, but it is well planned.
All right. Further questions from members? All right. With that, Mr. Shetman, you have 5 minutes.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair. Next, I'll have Guy Peterson, who's our Community Development Director for the Metropolitan Council. And he will go over our Livable Communities program, and we'll do that very quickly. Sure, if you want.
Go ahead, state your name for the record. You have about 5 minutes.
Madam Chair, my name is Guy Peterson. I'm Community Development Director for the Metropolitan Council, and I will have to race through this.
Great.
Just a quick overview. Remind you that the Livable Communities Act is legislation from 1995, a voluntary incentive-based approach to get communities to look at expanding housing choices, cleaning up polluted lands for jobs and tax base, and achieving connected development patterns that link housing, jobs, and services and maximize development potential of existing infrastructure and regional facilities. 105 communities presently participate in this incentive-based program. Obviously one of the major requirements of participation was negotiation of affordable housing goals with these communities. Those goals that are in place called for the addition of 16,000 affordable rental units over a 15-year period and 85,000 affordable ownership units. Through 2006, the results show that about 52% of the rental housing goals have been achieved with the addition of about 9,000 affordable rental units, while only about 42% of the affordable ownership goal has been achieved with the addition of 36,000 affordable ownership units.
If I could ask, why did we not meet the goal, or is the goal time frame not expired?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the time frame has not expired, but it is unlikely that in 3 years we will make up the ground to achieve the total goals that were negotiated. It is simply a matter of the marketplace with increased cost of new construction housing, the cost of land, and in particular the cost of, on the affordable side, making units affordable. The amount of subsidy that it takes to make units has tripled since the beginning of the program in terms of the subsidy for each unit to make them affordable. So a number of factors, but it just truly costs a lot more to create affordable housing units at this point than it did when the goals were negotiated in 1995.
All right, thank you.
Go ahead. In terms of some of the results, since 1996, the council has awarded a little more than $70 million for polluted site cleanup, about $81 million for the demonstration account program, and about $23 million to create affordable housing opportunities. I will just get to the results rather than speak to the particular aspects of the of each of the account programs and what they're to accomplish. I think it's pretty self-evident from the goals of the legislation. There's a map of the distribution of where the tax-based revitalization account funds have gone. In terms of results, since 1996, we've seen 241 polluted site cleanup grants go to about 35 communities. The expected and hoped for private investment from the cleanup of those lands and the development that takes place there will be approximately, at this point, about $4 billion. The net increase in the net tax capacity increase, about $75 million. About roughly two-thirds of this funding has gone into the central cities and one-third to suburban communities. Nearly 31,000 new and retained jobs because of this cleanup of these polluted sites, and over 1,600 acres of brownfields cleaned up. In terms of the demonstration account, funded by a property tax levy, this year's levy, about $8.2 million. There's again a map of the distribution. Some of the results to report on that, about 150 grants have gone out to 50 communities and three multi-community coalitions. Through 2006, grants have leveraged about $2.8 billion in expected private investment. Last year, the $5.9 million the judge mentioned of LCDA funds leveraged what is expected to be about $110 million in private investment for redevelopment and infill development of integrated mixed-use kinds of development. Finally, the local housing incentives account, the third program, $1.5 million, a very small program to provide affordable housing subsidies. We partner to a high degree with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency and the Family Housing Fund. Again, a very wide distribution, a lot of suburban use of this program. So far, since 96, $18.3 million in the form of grants to 111 grants, benefiting about 50 communities. These grants have leveraged about $473 million in private and public investment in affordable housing, creating over 2,200 new affordable rental units, rehabilitating over 600, adding nearly 600 affordable ownership units, and home improvements exceeding 1,100. So that was a very quick run through.
Questions from members? We actually have 30 seconds left. Thank you so much, members. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.